Good morning, everybody. I have 9 o'clock Pacific Coast time. That's a little bit different where I originated last night, but I want to welcome you to the workshop this morning. We're going to be sharing with you some case studies with different applications in middleware. So we have 3 speakers this morning, and I'll have them introduce themselves, say a little bit about what they do when they present. But I'm Jay Jones from Geisinger Health System. Kurt Hansen will be following me from the Mayo Clinic. And Johan Mouton from the Netherlands will be talking about some of his application with microbiology. So microbiology, hematology, chemistry. We tried to spread this out a little bit. I'm from a healthcare system in central Pennsylvania that is a regional system. So when I think of middleware, I think of very diverse applications. And middleware has become ubiquitous in our system. It's almost like money. It's the medium of exchange of information between diverse information systems. In our particular system, we have 3 hospitals. The main hospital in Danville, Pennsylvania, small town, population 6,000. 2 medical centers up in kind of the largest city in our geographic region, Wilkes-Barre. And then several large medical arts buildings that are all totally owned, staffed by salaried Geisinger physicians in various parts of the state, typically 20 to 30 docs practicing primary care or some specialties. And then about another 35 or so smaller locations that have 1 or 2 docs. Everything's on electronic health record. We're basically a paperless system. We're on a wide area network. The paper's gone away. Docs practice with a PC in an examining room. So a lot of this moving to the electronic era in order to make it integrate required middleware. And so we use it all over the place. Like I said, it's ubiquitous. I kind of have a Zen definition of middleware. If you kind of look at the pearl, you see that a pearl consists of a growth point, which in a way is something that rubbed the oyster the wrong way and the oyster started applying layers over it. So I don't want to, you know, say that an LIS is an irritant, but in many cases there's functionalities that the LIS just doesn't do very well, and so we have to place layer and layer after of middleware to bring that functionality into a full system. So kind of the functionality, the opulence, the value of a totally integrated information system is a core system that still is that archival system, but there's lots and lots of functional software that has been built around it. Certainly, just a single layer like you find in a cultured pearl is not, you know, a true functional system. It's not putting a GUI interface on a legacy system and saying that has full functionality. So we have indeed layered lots of middleware in our enterprise. And one of the case studies I'll show you kind of goes through that, because it isn't a focused application as much as it is an approach with best-of-breed information systems across all our various departments. So kind of a functional definition of middleware is a growing family of utilities which enables data to interoperate within diverse information systems. So this whole concept of interoperability is really key, especially when you look at this from an enterprise view. So I kind of look at middleware functionality as existing in buckets, you know, to try to simplify it. And I see 2 main branches of middleware applications and functional needs that various middleware products need to meet. There's process, and certainly in the laboratory we're process people. We're trying to become efficient, automated. But then there's also the practice. There's lots of medical application decision support that needs to be made on the middle side, on the clinical side, that is part of what we do too. So if you break this down further, you can see, and this is just one definition, you know, you can probably describe other buckets as well. But on the process side, there's certainly rules filters, you know, a very common form of middleware. Instrument console still doing lots of things as far as decision support in the process, as well as technical support, the need to come in from the outside or go to the outside with information that exchanges. Then on the practice side, real-time decision support systems. As they evolve, lab information is going to be key to feed clinical systems, to filter the quality of information before it goes to a clinical system or to integrate it in some way. And certainly data mining, as we get more and more into retrospectively looking at our archive to pull out information for future clinical use, that's another form where middleware is going to be used very heavily. On the process control side, you know, looking at the three main branches and, you know, some of the things that exist in those buckets, the rules filter certainly for auto verification, quality control, specimen management and routing, the instrument console with reagent management. Yeah, we're going to find more interoperability between the instrument console and the outside. Yeah, we're going to have smart instruments looking at lot numbers, knowing when a lot number changed and a patient test has to be repeated, perhaps even ordering up immediate supply, working with the supply chain, making sure that reagent is always at hand for the instrument. And technical support, remote diagnostics seems to have been around for a long time, one of the first applications of dialing in to troubleshoot an instrument, but I think that's going to grow much more in the future. Technical alerts, if we're interoperating with a remote website, I think we're going to see lots more application, perhaps even looking at set points of instruments and peer calibration. But all these are very diverse, and I think there's an opportunity now, as this is still in the growth phase, to look at consolidation. How many of these diverse applications can basically be run with a single information system? So it's kind of like point of care evolved. There are lots of point of care testing devices that all had their own data manager. And with some of the standardization efforts in the past couple of years, there's been consolidation of the data management aspect of getting point-of-care testing data into an LIS and an EMR. So I'll talk a little bit about the consolidation, some of the standardization efforts that are starting up in a little while. But the case studies I want to cite, I have three. One that kind of demonstrates the global, and this kind of wanders over to the clinical side, and it does kind of intercalate throughout our clinical enterprise. So I'll kind of warn you ahead. It's kind of a talk that shows various aspects of middleware in a very broad enterprise, kind of what evolved in our system that makes it functional, that's now giving us outcome data. Because one thing I want to be sure I cover in the talk is these aren't just neat things to do, but they're useful things to do that are producing an outcome. So I chose this with outcome in mind. Then another one, something we're doing with blood gas instruments and middleware, demonstrates more of the integrative nature of what we're doing through client servers or an enterprise server. And then finally, I wanted to give you a focused application where we're using a web tool to display real-time pending lists. And this is something that we've developed in-house, but it demonstrates the use of the web, which I think is going to be a very powerful tool for trafficking middleware information. One thing, so kind of going through the first application first, I have these labeled 1, 2, 3. Our LIS is the foundation of our infrastructure. Infrastructure is a word I like that I stole from Bruce Friedman. He's very good at coining terms that really nails what we've put together. We have a dedicated data center, and I think with regional systems, this is going to become more and more commonplace. A wide area network that's existed in rural Pennsylvania, where we are, linking our various practice sites since about 1994. So it's a very robust broadband network that we're using very heavily. And rack and stack client servers in that data center. We have moved as a system with our EHR, our lab, our various departments, and how they all interoperate with middleware into rack and stack and virtual client servers. That's one thing that is a problem in an industry. If a middleware vendor says, I have my pre-tested server, you have to take it. I won't just give you the software that you put on your own server. That's getting to be a problem. In our application, 90% are virtual servers with storage area networks, SANs, that share mass storage between different virtual servers. So that's what's happening in the data center of today. It's very efficient and it works. We've spent a lot of money on our electronic health record, which is Epic Care, and that is our basic driving business strategy. So we have to be middlewared or integrated in one form or another into our electronic health record for virtually everything we do. Our LIS is still key, not just to the lab, but to the enterprise. Now, there's lots of estimates about the percentage of information that feeds the electronic health record and the decision-making process in medicine being a lab parameter. So we're right in the thick of it. A very key piece of middleware for integrating this to basically take LIS information after it's been fed by lab instruments, point of care, or even a remote outreach module is an interface engine DataGate. So we use DataGate technology and Cisco routers to get information to where it needs to go. And I think there's several new companies that are springing up. NeoTools is one that comes to mind for doing this integrative process. So we have a lot of diverse information systems. Pharmacy has their own, cardiology has their own, business office has their own, lab has their own. So DataGate is what really passes around that HL7 information and makes this really operate in a uniform way. We've standardized a lot of our LIS parameters for the LIS standpoint of it, not just to standardize methods, but also to standardize a common approach for supporting those methods in the LIS. So we call that lean informatics. So we're connected to billing, the electronic health record, and middleware exists all throughout the system to bring these systems together. This is not one big monolithic Epic system. There's lots of small pieces. Claim scrubbers, for example, if we want to know what test and what CPT codes or ICD-9 codes are preferentially reimbursed. That is part of the decision support system that operates in middleware. Since we've been on the electronic health record for a number of years now, we started rolling it out, like I said, in earnest about 1996. We're now a paperless system. Our recent addition is a Center for Health Research. It's a building that does focused outcome research. And there's a number of projects going on there. I won't enumerate these in full, but they're looking at clinical effectiveness. They're taking information out of various source of truth information systems like the lab and using those parameters to embed in the electronic health record as best practice. And part of that is making us win in pay for performance. We can send the right test being done at the right time for the right reason to the government and be fully reimbursed because we have a systematic way to study and to have our physicians order the right test. In fact, we have a product called Proven Care where in our heart hospital, if you go in for bypass surgery, you're given a guarantee you will not have adverse outcomes. If you develop a deep sternal wound infection, you don't pay the bill for the readmission. And I think the government in the U.S. is going to move more and more this way. They're not going to pay for complications that we created. We actually have an incentive that I'll show you. Physicians have 20% of their salary at risk. If they don't click on the right test, then that actually is followed on a system dashboard, again supported by middleware, that will show that they aren't going to earn the 20% of their salary that is put at risk. So we're putting teeth in our best practice clinic alerts so that it hits the doctor in the pocketbook. So we get very good compliance from day one. I won't go through all these. One thing that's kind of interesting is we have started a MyCode biorepository. With informed consent, patients will send in a lavender tube, will extract DNA from it and put it in a DNA bank for future research. We have a state grant to do this on 200,000 of our patients in central Pennsylvania. We're starting with 20,000 in primary care, banking their DNA. We have their electronic information, and we can start looking at diseases like osteoporosis, what's in the EHR as far as DEXA scans, et cetera, versus what's in their DNA. So middleware makes this all happen. You know, it's just there are too many applications to really enumerate, but it's what brings all this together in a highly functioning system. Back in the lab, again, looking at the enterprise aspect of this, enterprise analytics is an important structural component. So when we start looking at middleware products, we're looking at middleware products that support us across the entire enterprise. So again, it has to be something that fits on a client server. If you have a nice instrument that just has local middleware and that won't fit on a client server to support us at multiple sites, that really doesn't fit our system. So we share LIS test codes, methods, right down to the calibrator lot number, reference ranges, critical limits. So again, lean informatics is what really makes a lot of this manageable. We have a common lot number of quality control, and quality control is something we're looking at porting out through middleware on our wide area network. Point of care is interleaved in the electronic health record. We have point of care devices connected, again, through a client server up in our data center, another application of middleware on a client server. So there's lots of efficiency in this if you're part of a large enterprise at picking a product and then standardizing it throughout your various labs. So basically, our chemistry immunology platform, I like to think of as a single 400-channel instrument that happens to have a couple channels here and there in central Pennsylvania. But from a functional standpoint, how we manage it, we're going to be doing it more and more on an enterprise basis. Just to give you an idea of what our physicians see to produce good outcome, these are alert-specific order sets where they will order a bundle of tests for diabetes. And basically, best practice alerts present to the physician, and they say accept, that blows all those orders into that particular diabetic patient. They did the right thing, and the system dashboard will acknowledge that. That doctor with that patient complied with best practice alerts. For diabetes, these are the various things. There are seven that we have turned on. That's nine, including A1C, LDL, and microalbumin. And we have a standard that for every patient with diabetes, the standard is they will get those best practice measures done. In some cases, they'll actually look for a quantitative level. A doctor gets credit for compliance with that patient if he or she can demonstrate an A1C of less than 7%. And again, this all blows into a system console where our 600 physicians, the majority of which are in primary care, will be followed for this and it will hit their incentive. This is what has produced an outcome. This shows the number of those compliance measures and the percent of doctors that have hit a certain number of them. So basically, this curve over time has moved to the right, and the number of physicians that have met all nine of those practice goals has gone from 2% up to 7%, and this continues to improve. But this is kind of like moving a mountain as far as getting docs to do the right thing for a focused set of patients. This is diabetes. We have 20,000 people diagnosed with diabetes. We also have 6 or 7 other practice bundles with a common approach. And again, as far as outcome, this middleware supported clinical practice system in the EHR has shown improvement just in 6 months when we started doing this, and it continues to improve. A1Cs, the percent that are less than 7 have increased from about 28% up to 33%. In a big population, that's significant as far as preventing downstream complications. And you can see LDL less than 100 has improved. That's easy, you just give them a drug. Blood pressure has improved. So this is really one of the driving business strategies we have. And as we market our HMO to industry, we can show these numbers that we're practicing good population medicine. Okay, so that kind of gives you a flavor for middleware is in our culture. HL7 cloud kind of surrounds what we do from an information system standpoint. One that, a project we did that shows more of the integrative nature within the laboratory had to do with supporting centralized blood gas testing. So this is more on the instrument level. We have some, probably 15% of the blood gases we do are done at point of care for niche applications. Neonatal ICU, for example, where volume's a consideration. But by and large, including with the operating room, we have specimens pneumatically tubed to the central laboratory. These are critical tests, and the Joint Commission is really pushing on that. We had our Joint Commission inspection, they asked us, what are your critical tests and what are you doing about them? So we were able to cite cardiovascular OR as something where we're trying to improve turnaround time, trying to demonstrate progress in improving the process. So we really did look at vein to brain turnaround time. A lot of labs, and including us until recently, were measuring turnaround time in terms of in-lab turnaround time. It's only when we started opening up our thinking to the entire process of vein to brain turnaround time, from the brain to, from the vein of the patient back to the brain of the provider, define the real turnaround time as far as meeting the clinical need. And while we did this, even though we piloted it in one hospital, we were looking at enterprise-wide integration. We have 3 hospitals, all have the same blood gas instrument. They're all in the client server. So again, we focused on one location, but we're looking at rolling it out to the other 2. So that's one of the approaches in proving middleware. We don't try to do it on the whole system on day one. We try to get it up and running in one location, then we roll it out. Because there is a lot of complexity on the implementation side. I see great products, I see all the features, and at first blush it looks like, oh yeah, we can do that, we can just plug that right in. But the reality is you get it home, you talk to the IT people, and you come up with all kinds of issues with security and licensing and conflicts with other patients and who has the resources to do it. So it's very important when you look at, especially at this kind of integration, you really size up all those integrative touch points before you go out and really start piloting it. This just shows in the lab, we were doing pretty good. Usually the in-lab turnaround time for a blood gas was averaged about 2.3 minutes. And those were the numbers we thought we were doing great. You go out and you talk to the clinicians who are more vein to brain, they say, it takes about 15 minutes to get a blood gas. And that's what's important as far as the clinical application for critical patients. And so we did a study and really mapped the whole process. And we saw that there's a lot of time with our old system in the operating room just collecting the specimen, drawing it off a line, labeling it, passing it to a circulator, filling out a requisition, getting the specimen to the pneumatic tube, lots of handoffs, pass-offs. So, you know, it was taking more time just preparing the specimen than it was in running it. And when we added all this up, what the clinician said was true. It takes about 15 minutes to get a blood gas. And we thought we had a highly efficient system. So that's where we started looking at middleware, this particular middleware application, to try to improve that. We still have pneumatic tube transport time. There's not too much we can do about that unless we really improve our pneumatic tube system. But this opens up the thinking. If you're going to keep blood gases centralized, these are the kind of numbers you have to be aware of. So this is a schematic of the system we went to. We have three hospitals with 2, 3, and 2 identical analyzers on the wide area network on a client server called Radiance, with a portion of it, a module called FlexLink. And this is on the same wide area network as SunQuest, our archival system, and our electronic health record. But there's all this application in the OR, which heretofore we knew very little about. We knew where the OR was, but we didn't know too much about their process. What we found, in order to develop this, I kind of call this middle space, there had to be a lab terminal for ordering these tests. There needed to be a barcode printer. When a patient's draped undergoing CV surgery, you really can't walk up to the wrist and scan them in. If you go to the admission office and say, well, print me a second barcode that can follow the patient, they say, no, we're not going to do that. Barcodes will float around and end up with the wrong patient. That's a patient safety issue. So basically, in the OR, we had to get a barcode printer where they could reprint patient ID separate from the patient. These are all issues you run into when you start prototyping these complex implementations. Plus, the operating room had a bypass pump integrated into a system they call Databond that contains a lot of their flow sheeting and a lot of their information system. So we were looking at integrating the lab piece, especially the terminal for ordering blood gases and looking up blood gases, into the Databond setup, and I'll show you pictures of that. But again, the middleware in this case is a server that is part of the instrument system. And I think several instrument vendors are moving this direction. They're not just selling an analytical box, they're now selling a total system that includes the information processing piece. So this is what it looks like in the OR. This is the Databond, the bypass pump. This is a terminal, it's a lab terminal. This usually very harried perfusionist has to be focused on the field of what they're doing. Perfusionists don't want to be running lab tests. That's too distracting. If they lose sight of their bypass pump and they pump air into the patient, the patient's dead. So there are more important things to do than punching in six-digit numbers on handheld devices. And so they actually support the idea, give me a good interface and let lab do the lab thing. Just give me good turnaround time and a good user interface, and we'll be happy with that. So basically what we have is a three-step process with a scanning wand where the perfusionist is doing her job with the bypass pump. They have a barcode handy, so when they want a blood gas on that patient, they'll wand in the barcode. The syringe is pre-barcoded, so there's no printing out a label or fix the label. It's right on the barcode. And the operator ID is a badge on the operator. So it's beep, beep, beep. That's a blood gas order, no paper. That syringe then goes off to the lab. And by the way, this can be wireless. It can either be on the network or can be wireless. So it can move around if need be. We're already looking at anesthesiologists who have carts that are on wireless being able to do something similar to the perfusionist. The syringe goes off to the lab by pneumatic tube. The instrument already has it. It's coming through Radiance and FlexLink. It's in the instrument. The barcode syringe goes on the instrument, is scanned in, and the instrument knows what to do, does the test, and then instrument generated order from the instrument sends it off to SunQuest, our LIS, and sends it also back to the screen where the perfusionist resides. So that's kind of like a flash report. So we see real benefits in going to wireless or electronic order entry rather than paper, pre-barcoded syringe, 3-barcode wanding pass. These are a lot more efficient than the old way, including what we were doing in the past is intercomming a result back to the anesthesiologist who's in the cockpit right at the head of the patient. And then they would have to pass the information over to the perfusionist. So we're estimating, once this prototype is fully implemented, an 8-minute vein-to-brain turnaround time. And if we can improve the pneumatic tube by a couple minutes, we might be down to 5 or 6 minutes. That's total turnaround time. And to most perfusionists and OR staff, that's fast enough. In fact, they're living right now with a 15-minute turnaround time, and they're not bitterly complaining. But we know we can do better. So the advantages of this kind of client-server middleware connectivity, fewer footprints in the laboratory. There's not as many terminals. It really does consolidate things up in the data center where patches and maintenance of the client-server or virtual server can be done by IT professionals. It really does encourage enterprise standardization, both on the CVOR side and the lab side. How we put in FiO2 and some of the clinical parameters tends to be much more standardized if you're working with the same information system. Simplifies IT maintenance, centralizes data storage. We have a full quality control and scientific record on a server. We can look back at any of our practice sites. We can do comparisons. This ships off quality control to a remote web server. And we don't have to fill in all the parameters and then mail it off US mail. The peer comparison QC comes back as an email attachment. So these are all step-by-step gains in efficiency. And it works. The final application I'd like to share with you in the final 10 minutes is something we did in-house with a application that used to be called Cold Fusion. It's now owned by Adobe. It's Adobe Flex. This was an application that an in-house developer did in his spare time in about 2 weeks. So this is not rocket science. This is just knowledge, knowing the web development tool. And working with the lab, knowing what we wanted, he converted quite easily. And the whole concept here is we wanted functionality with this middleware approach that allowed us to change our own parameters. Rather than sending a form to IT saying, well, I want to monitor the turnaround time of toxicology now, so change something in the computer and tell me when it'll go live. We'll sit down at the desktop and do it in 5 seconds, literally. I'll show you some of the screens for doing that. So we're managing our own application as you would expect to do on the web, managing your own URL. It includes, we can define what tests we want to measure turnaround time, what windows do we want it to start sending alarm after 20 minutes or 40 minutes. And this is available 24/7, any lab on our internet. And we now have them in large screen monitors that makes it a lot easier for just the dynamics in the laboratory. I'll show you pictures of that. We can add color for alerts. If something is just about ready to be late, it'll go red, or it'll be yellow before it actually goes late. And we can even put in sound alerts, but those quickly get turned off. They're annoying after about the first day. So we just go with color. This is what they look like. This is our stat lab. This is the tool that I'll be describing in more detail. It's up on the wall, just sits there. I walk by and look in the window, and I see red up there. I say, oh, you know, they have some delays this morning. Maybe an instrument is having a problem. This is our tox area. And you'll see that these screens are divided in quadrants, so we're actually looking at four groupings of tests simultaneously. And the color is really nice. You just know from a glance. The worker just has to look up every once in a while. And they see something is turning yellow. It has a specimen number. They'll look down in their samples that are running to see if that's just about ready to be verified. And it won't turn red. So this replaces the pending list. It used to be that lab, at the end of a shift, would pull a pending list, which would be fan-fold several pages, and walk around the lab and say, well, let's see, this specimen, that's done. This one, I can't find that. I'll have to go look in the rack, see if it's been in lab yet. And that's 8 hours, potentially, after something was already late. So pending lists are more of a log for finding lost specimens, not really a way of making sure the turnaround time parameters are met. This was done. Actually, we have a whole suite of tools. This MMON is the website that our web developer developed that is just for the piece I'm showing you. But he's developed several of these middleware web applications for shipping around graphic images and pathology, for looking at the process of sending slides and frozen sections through the lab. So you can see that this is something that is really gathering momentum as far as using web development tools internally to track processes, make them more efficient. So I'll show you a little bit more about this one. This is what a screen looks like. Again, it's quadrants. The yellow means that there's a specimen that is in the lab, but it's not been resulted yet, and it's at risk for being late for whatever parameter we describe for that test. So this might be electrolytes, this might be cardiac, this might be women's center, estradiols, whatever we want to define it. This is the console that we have in the supervisor's office to set up that large screen. Here's the four quadrants. And they can go in and select from a pull-down menu what tests they want to look at. Here are the tests, from what locations. So this one looks like it's cardiac markers. We're looking at our emergency room and the cardiac care unit. Set up a quadrant on the screen for that. We don't need that anymore. We can set up that quadrant in a few minutes for some other grouping of tests for other locations. So you can see this is very flexible. There's basically two screens to go into that a supervisor can go in and change these if there happens to be a particular problem. This is where they go in and set the locations, set the tests, and set the time windows for alerts. So here's 4 minutes after it's in the lab. The big screen turns yellow after 4 minutes, telling the technologist it's going to be a few more minutes before it's 7. When it's 7 minutes, it turns red. This screen is updated every few minutes. So basically, the middleware goes out and pulls the LIS for the timestamps. Those labs that have been received are pulled into this database and then sorted and put in this display. So the outcome was saved labor. We don't have a tech walking around with pending lists looking frustrated. We especially identify the turnaround time misadventures, that troponin that got set aside or left in a centrifuge for 30 minutes. We know it when it's happening that, hey, there's a delay. Where is that specimen? And we'll pull those in. We're now changing turnaround time to encompass not just that time from receipt, but time from collection. So it's looking at a broader window. Because that's what the Joint Commission wants. They want vein to brain turnaround time. This is a chart where we're tracking on a weekly basis the turnaround time, in this case for troponin and CKMB. And here is the mode for troponin and CKMB. So that tracks a little bit lower, about 25 minutes. And that's basically telling you that the distribution of turnaround times are kind of skewed. The ones that are delayed kind of pull the average out to longer time frames. But there are those that are the mode that are most common. That shows that that's best practice. We can hit that if we get rid of that tail of that curve. This is the average of CKMB and troponin, so it's always a bit longer. You know, that one specimen that took over an hour is going to move the average up, but it won't impact the mode. You can see over the course of a couple months, after turning on the real-time monitor, the misadventures improved, and basically the average merged into the mode. So we're hitting best practice. So we can demonstrate positive outcome with a relatively inexpensive tool that we developed in-house. And this is on the wide area network. The other hospital uses it. It's basically a matter of logging into the system, setting up your parameters, and buying a big screen monitor if you need to display it. It does require a network connection. It isn't something you just plug and play. There's still a little bit in setting up these big screens, but 42-inch screen is what? 800, 900, 1200 bucks, something like that. So it's very affordable. So those are the three applications that I wanted to share with you. I want to finish up with something that's happening pretty much right now. I don't know if many of you are aware that a couple years ago there was a connectivity industrial consortium, which was industry coming together around need for connectivity of point of care testing devices. Well, this effort is very similar to that. In fact, for a while it was naming itself CIC2, the Connectivity Industrial Consortium 2. In the last couple weeks, as it's organizing, it's renamed itself. It's now the IICC, the IVD Industrial Connectivity Consortium. We have all the major instrument vendors there. Some LISs, middleware vendors, are looking at this as a way to really consolidate the applications, certainly around HL7, in a way that different instruments can be benefiting from common middleware. Rather than to have their own middleware solution, this is something that can be shared and consolidated, and certainly is something that the user wants. CIC1 raised a war chest. As industry came together, they pledged $50,000 to stake the effort. They sent their talent in, and within a year, they had a standard. That is the intent of this second effort, and already a couple vendors have stepped forward and pledged the same level of support. The governance of this group is coming together as we speak. I just heard this morning that there now are a slate of people contributed by industry who will act as CEO of this organization. They'll have governance rules, et cetera. So they'll incorporate and then sunset. The first real organizational meeting was in Tarrytown, New York last October. I hear there's going to be another meeting June of this year, and probably also at AACC. This was pretty much sponsored by AACC. There's a consultant who works very closely with AACC, Emery Stevens, who is kind of the founder of this. And this just shows you that industry can work together and develop joint standards, where a lot of those layers of the pearl, these layers of middleware, be they hematology, microbiology, chemistry, finance, turnaround time, process control, automatic ordering of supply. All those applications can potentially operate with a common convention. So hopefully we'll have a disk that is developed by IACC, then handed off to CLSI in the not too distant future. So some final thoughts as I wrap up here. Bit of advice: as you layer in middleware applications, and people in the lab are the appliers, we need to know a bit about the IT side to really pull all this off. But I think we're in the driver's seat as far as defining our applications and being wise enough to know at the implementation layer what can be done and what is just too complex to really approach. And we have to explain it to the IT people so that they're confident this is a valid application and it's not just going to be a white elephant. And we have to think how they fit into the entire enterprise. I think the various disciplines in the lab, and that's AP as well as CP, need to work together. We have AP people, pathologists in our group that are also working. Like I said, they're shipping around graphic images with the same approach. Middleware is in a germinal state and will accelerate its growth with associated maintenance issues. If everybody jumps into this and starts developing their own application, it's going to become eventually a nightmare to integrate and maintain from a licensing standpoint, from a testing standpoint, from an upgrade standpoint, security, so forth and so on. So we really have to plan and budget for the licenses of middleware touch points. If you install middleware to bring in instruments, you still have to pay the LIS company for those instruments that are interfaced through a middleware product. So there's some new rules to the game, you know, certainly I as a clinical chemist have to be aware of if I want to produce these enterprise solutions. And I think I've tried to keep it as simple as possible as we roll out these middleware applications. And we continue to do just that. We certainly have a lot of projects in mind, and it's just going to be taking up more and more of our time in the future. So I don't want to cut into the time of the next speaker too much, but I might have time for one or two questions before Dr. Hansen comes up and kind of shifts gears over to hematology. Any questions? Okay, if not, then introduce Dr. Hansen. Thank you.